We have something slightly different for our first feature. Our regular feature reader, Ian Robertson, has found a book called Wednesday Mornings. It contains 50 essays published in the Eastern Daily Press between 1949 and 1954 on a weekly basis on a Wednesday morning. All were written by the journalist Eric Fowler under the name of Jonathan Mardle. Ian has chosen to read from that book, The Roundabout, published in 1952.
The first feature requires a little introduction. It's an essay by Eric Fowler, written under the pseudonym Jonathan Mardle, and it was published in the Eastern Daily Press on the 16th of April, 1952. It's over 70 years old, so the wording might not be used in modern parlance. Here we go. We in this country are in the admiration of all polite foreigners for our orderliness and self-discipline, or that, at least, is what they tell us. They admire the way we submit to rationing and voluntary form queues for everything we require, from houses to seats in buses. Unprotesting, we even queue for long periods in the drafty approaches to miserable extemporised offices for the ration books, which are our passports to further queues at the butchers and the grocers. I sometimes wonder, and I wonder whether these flattering foreigners wonder, whether we are not getting rather dismally orderly. For a people which prides itself on its freedom and independence, as well as its self-discipline, it seems humiliating to be caught forming a queue in a national exhibition behind a couple of overseas visitors who have merely stopped to look at their programmes. This happened at the South Bank exhibition last year, and was in itself a remarkable exhibition of the habit of waiting in line for unspecified benefits. But at Norwich Fair on Monday, I found evidence that we are not yet wholly tame, or, if you will, civilised. I found it, of all places, at a children's roundabout, which was surrounded by admiring parents whose children were already riding and suffering parents who were hoping to get their importunate offspring onto a roundabout the next time. They suffered because their task was not merely to get their children onto the roundabout, but onto the particular toy railway engine, motor bus, car or aeroplane which had taken their fancy. Since a roundabout is approachable from all directions, people cannot queue for it. They have to cluster round in a deplorably undisciplined fashion. Being British and polite and orderly, they might perhaps form a series of queues like spokes radiating from the hub of a wheel opposite the points where the particular objects of their children's desire might be expected to stop. But the roundabout is like one of those race games played with little horses mounted on a roulette wheel. You never know where it is going to stop. You may put your stake on, or in this case your child, in the position you fancy, but the odds are about 10-1 against the fire engine, complete with bell, which little Tommy wants, stopping opposite little Tommy. The odds are lengthened by the possibility that even if the fire engine does stop near him, some more aggressive child, in charge of a more thrustful parent, may elbow him out of the way, and, if necessary, trample on him. It is also possible that the envied child, previously in possession of the fire engine and bell, may want to stay on it for a further round, and he may have a doting parent who will let him. So if nobody can turn him off on the grounds of equity and fair shares for all, for there are some rules, even in this game, one that is in possession is not 9, but 10 points of the law. The other is that you must pay, the roundabout man. He is a wild-looking, unshaven creature, a nomad who works with no plan or rule of conduct framed in cities. It would be interesting to know what determined his particular choice of occupation as the operator of a children's roundabout. He betrays no liking for children. He looks fierce and sunburnt, enough to be one of those gypsy kidnappers against whom old-fashioned nurses used to warn their charges. He is presumably able to influence the position in which the roundabout stops, but he seems to prefer to leave it to chance and watches the ensuing riot with detachment. There are about three times as many children and four times as many parents as there are places on the roundabout. Some parents scramble to lift their children off the roundabout. Others fight to lift theirs on. Meek little men who look as if they were born to stand at the tail end of any queue that was ever formed suddenly disguise fair nature with hard-favoured rage and storm the toy motor bus as if it were the breach at Agincourt. Downtrodden housewives who patiently abide the decision of the butcher in the matter of a share of liver and humble themselves before the greengrocer for an allocation of bananas imitate the action of a tiger and claw a pathway for little Doris to the bicycle with real pedals. The result reveals the characters of the children even more nakedly than those of the parent. Mark that boy who by force has cloven his way to the big engine and then by guile has slipped into the driving seat where he commands both the steering wheel and the bell. He will go far. In a capitalist economy, he'll probably become a company promoter. In a socialist one, he'll be a public works contractor with influential friends. Or in a communist one, he'll be a commissar. The modest and biddable are behind him in the passenger seats, admiring his conduct to the bell. The dreamers are still in the footway, awaiting their turn. The roundabout man comes along with his grubby hand outstretched to interpret in his primitive fashion the economics of competitive society. He waves aside the proffered threepences. "It'll be sixpence this time. It's getting crowded," he says.